November 27th, 2012, and we are in the Peggy Arnsman home in Kinsley, Kansas. And we're going to be talking to her about the Tractorcade today. I am Joan Weaver, and Rosetta Graff is here, and Marvin Arnsman is also present. Okay, well, first of all, Peggy, what we'd like you to do, what was your farm like in 1979? I mean, how much land did you own, or while you were farming, or what do you remember about that, the 70s there?
Marvin had a big cow herd. We also, he went into Oklahoma and bought cattle and brought them here, and bought bulls, and he would work them, and they went to the feedlot then. He had wheat at that time. Excuse me. Later we raised triticale, but at that time we were raising wheat.
What was that you were raising?
Triticale.
How do you spell that? You
know? T-R-I-T-I-C-A-L-E.
What is that?
Well, there's an article over there about it. It's a cross between rye and wheat. And it's very good with cattle because there's so many different ways you can use it.
About how much land did you have, do you know? Or?
About 5,000 acres. Oh, I'm sorry. I lied. 6,000.
6,000. Okay.
We had hired men here, and so I always fed the hired men. And when we got to going to D.C., Marvin took care of the cattle here, and I took care of the lobbying. So we still had a division of property.
And was the farm your sole source of income at that time, or did either of you work outside?
No. Okay. It was a sole source.
Okay, so how did you hear about the American agriculture movement in the beginning? How did you get involved with it?
We went to Hayes to listen to a speaker we heard advertised. And I can't even tell you now who the speaker was, but there was something about the whole thing that sort of caught fire with us.
Was there a group of you that went up? Or?
There, yes, it was a. It was in one of the college's buildings up there. And
do you remember about how many people attended?
Oh, it was a huge group.
Huge group?
Yeah, the whole auditorium was packed.
Do you remember the reception that the speaker got?
A very good reception, yeah. Yeah, stomping feet and yelling and standing up at some points. And,
would this have been in like 1977 maybe, or 70, about, it would be before?
Later 70s, I can't pinpoint it, can you, Marvin?
No, not for sure.
Can you remember who the speaker was?
No.
I don't either. We went to the inaugural ball, and it was the only time Marvin's ever worn a tux.
What inaugural ball?
We went to Reagan's inaugural ball.
Oh, okay. This is going to be a little later, though. This is after you were involved.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, this will jump around.
Well, let me ask questions, and maybe I can keep you chronologically, because I get confused sometimes with these things. Okay, so you went up there, and you liked what you heard, and then what did you do when you came back? How did it get organized down here?
You know, I don't know.
Who were some of the other farmers in Kinsley that were involved?
I can't even tell you that, because there were people from Operly and people from on north and west of us here that worked out of Lewis. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what the Kinsley office was like, but the Lewis office was all business. And they kept someone in the office at all times, just like a regular office. Mm-hmm. And we took turns sitting in the office, being so, office help.
So you worked over in the Lewis office some?
Mm-hmm.
And basically, you were an information office, or what went on?
Right. There were a bunch of people from there that went on to D.C., and we'd get the tickets straightened out and try to help people with money if they couldn't afford it themselves and all that type of thing. And have you talked to Jack Wolf?
Yes.
Okay.
So I think the first thing I remember with the Kinsley and probably Lewis too is there was a tractorcade to Topeka where a bunch went up. The Kinsley people rode on a bus, I think, in 77, December of 77. Mm-hmm. Were you involved with that at all?
Right.
Did you go up with that group on the bus or drive up?
We took a couple of our kids with us, too.
Okay. Which children were those?
Randy went and Jody went.
And about how old were they? Let's see, 79?
Jody would have been like 5.
Jody was 5 and Randy was
about 13.
Mm-hmm. That sounds about right.
Is that because you didn't have someone to leave them with or just because there
was... No, we wanted them involved. Mm-hmm. We wanted them to see what we were doing and why.
And you had 2 other older children. Were they already out of the household then or... I'm trying to think. Look at those both too.
They're pretty well, yeah. Yeah, they were old enough to do their own thing.
That first trip to Topeka, what do you remember about that? Any?
Oh, we had a friend from Abilene that had a prize bull. It was a beautiful thing, and he was very, very tame. And he brought him and led him around and...
Is
he was in the parade.
Is this on the Capitol lawn or something, or just he was
yeah,
in the,
he
was in
up
the parade?
Around, we were up around the Capitol, but we were also in a big auditorium. I don't remember what auditorium or anything at this point.
Close to
Capitol. Had this bull out there in the parade and then outside the auditorium?
Yeah.
And there were a lot of signs, and, well, I don't know on this one. Were there tractors, or did you just walk in that parade?
You remember?
No, he was in front of the Capitol there and he was giving speech to us.
Yeah. Speeches in front of the Capitol outside.
A couple of the guys from South Carolina were up here. The guys from the South were in here.
As speakers or?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. And,
then... Did you contact your representatives there, the federal let's see, it was Bob Dole at that time, or were you just demonstrating on the...
Dole and Glickman, yeah. And American Ag had an office there in Topeka.
Now, I'm going to ask you this question, but we may not. Is this when WIFE was starting also, or is this a little later? Which came first, WIFE? What does WIFE stand for, maybe?
WIFE, Women Involved in Farm Economics.
Okay. Was this that?
Women came before.
Women came before, mm-hmm. And were you involved in it before then? Okay, well, maybe we better...
No, I take that back. I was not. I was not involved in WIFE until after.
After the trip.
After that, yeah. Lewis had a WIFE chapter also.
Now, why were you involved at Lewis? Because you were living here, right?
Yes, we were living here because Lewis was more active and they were all business. You know, if you're going to do something, you better do it wholeheartedly. Mm-hmm. And
Western Lewis and Belfry.
Western Lewis and Belfry.
Well, Doyle Jones is from
Overly
were involved.
Mm-hmm.
Daryl Miller. Yeah, we've talked to Daryl, and we're about to talk to Joneses, I think. Well, and then the next time they went to Topeka was in 78, and that time they drove tractors from Lewis. Did you ever drive a tractor, or?
I drove a tractor downtown in D.C.
Yeah, and they had quite a few little tractorcades in the towns around here also. But the only time you drove was actually in D.C. Okay. Well, I don't know. Why don't you go ahead and tell us about your involvement then with the D.C. or whatever. you were telling us now, did you start going to D.C. before the big tractorcade, or was that after?
Oh, no.
Okay.
A long time before.
So that year before, in 78 probably, you were going to D.C. And
it was, now as I look back on it, it was surprising that I did that, because the only time I was out of state was when we ran off and got married. And I had never ridden a plane. I was really a green country woman. I don't know why I got it in my head that I could lobby, you know. But at the time, it didn't seem to be any question. It was just the next thing to do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know why.
Did you have any education with speech or anything? Any,
just high school.
Just high school, no training, but this was something that was important?
You know, your farm is not only important to the people that live on it now, but it's important to the family, the other family members. And if you lose the farm, you're letting your family members down, as well as your past family members, you know.
Okay, yeah. The heritage and the future.
Right.
And were you worried about losing the farm?
Oh, yeah. Everybody that was involved was. That was
mm-hmm.
that was why we were doing this. One of the farm bills, we had worked for 4 years to trade Eastern Seaboard boats on fuel oil for the farm bill, some things we needed for the farm bill for wheat. And Dole had graciously decided to trade his vote for one of them. And everything had gone just fine when it came to the fuel bill. Everything went through like it should have. And we were very excited because this was a biggie with the farm bill. When they were doing the vote, we were all outside the chamber. And those halls up there are marble, so anything that happens echoes. When the vote came through, Dole did not vote the way he had agreed to. The farmers started crying because there was a good deal of them that knew a 0.5% raise in interest would put them out of business. And so it was a very precarious situation they were in. And that was when interest was so high, you know, 22-23% for farmers. And some of the cotton people down south were paying 35, which was illegal. But when Dole didn't vote the way he had pledged to vote, the farmers started crying. And it was the most eerie sound in that hall. It wasn't a quiet sobbing, it was, you know, really heart-wrenching. And I think that was one of the most heart-wrenching things that I've ever been through, was standing there and with my friends and listening to this and
that would be
wondering why, you know, what, knowing that our person was responsible for that, and what did we not do, or what did we do that.
Did you ever find out why he changed his mind? Indicating no.
No.
That would be.
No, Dole used to say that he didn't have very high opinion of farmers. And he used to say he could do one thing before an election and he'd get for the farmer and he'd get elected. And the bad thing of it was he was a Republican, and that's pretty well what happened. Because many of the farmers out here didn't pay attention to to what was actually going on, you know, mm-hmm. and didn't make our people be responsible for their votes. And I'm afraid that's still going on.
So when you went up there and you lobbied, what do you mean by that? What were your activities?
Well, there were several things I did. I testified, and as I showed you, I had a red folder with my testimony in it. And it would be all typed up. And I'd have my card on the front And you had to have 100 copies to hand out. And then whatever committee or whoever you were testifying to, we had to have the folders for each of those.
So this would be in the Senate that you're testifying from? Right?
Well...
Or the House?
The House and the Senate, and then the Ag Committees.
And the Ag Committee.
And sometimes there were other committees. Some, once in a while, we'd lop over into the military, and a lot of the time, then we were testifying to finance committees.
And you told us before the tape, but let's get it on the tape, why was it a red folder?
Because we were operating in the red. We were also wearing red, and while I'm thinking about it right now, mm-hmm. I was an outreach office for, 5 to 7 people, depending on what time frame we're talking about. And I was one of Ed Kennedy's outreach offices. Do you know what an outreach office is?
No.
You collect information from the newspapers and various publications, see that these people get it, and Ted Kennedy told me several times, I know nothing about wheat. That's not, that's just not in my area. And so when he was going to be voting on a bill that had to do with wheat and cattle and this type of thing, he would have an ag committee, his ag chairman call, and we'd go over it, and then when I found things that were interesting, I'd cut them and sent. We took 5 to 7 newspapers all the time, and it was a real interesting thing.
You personally took 5 to 7?
Yes. We had a round robin newspaper, and we would cut it and send it on to the next person in different areas. And the government tells different things to different areas. And another thing that I found that was very interesting was that I thought the agriculture news would come out of the USDA. It does not. When you lobby, they'll tell you, well, agriculture is not that important, but the only news that comes out of the basement of the White House is agriculture news. If we're so unimportant, why do we come out of there?
So you said you would spend like a week at home and a week in D.C. and go back
mm-hmm.
and forth
mm-hmm.
testifying. Did you work in the AAM office there in D.C. or were you?
Well, I didn't just work in the office. When I went to D.C., I had a full week of work. I had. I could get in on a good day. I could get in on 2 to 3 testimonies. You gave 10 to 15 minutes of testimony, but you might have an hour of questions afterwards. My health was beginning to fail at that point, and I could do 3 testimonies and I'd be shot.
Now, were you alone doing this, or did you have someone with you when you would go to...
Depending on, that again depends on where I'm at and all. Not out of the office, I just went by myself.
Mm-hmm.
Once in a while, Jack Wolf and I would go into Wichita and fly together.
Mm-hmm.
I worked with Texans because we started this by the cattle. As I said, we had cattle in the feedlot. And we knew there was something wrong with our markets. They weren't what they should have been. Supply and demand wasn't such a thing. That's how we got into all of this, was trying to figure out what was going on. And we were playing with our money, and it would be nice to know what was going on.
Did you figure it out?
To my satisfaction, yes. I found out that the Board of Trade at that point was governed by a computer that was usually the size of a home computer.
And it was making the decisions, or?
It was accumulating information, and
mm-hmm.
yeah. I was interviewed for a job in the USDA, and it was, there are some things that people that are not on the farm just know that you don't do. Well, I didn't know a lot of these things, and so I did them. they were showing me through the USDA, and I asked several people, what's your job description? Well, for every person in the USDA, there are 7 farmers out here. And that was when I lobbied. There's less now. Anyway, I would ask, what's your job description? Well, I was not aware at the time that when a new president came in, he appoints his own people, and then they sit there until they retire. And so a lot of them did not have a job description. And they get real nervous, you know, and here I was asking them what their job was, you know. When we went into the inaugural, Marvin was to ride in the parade. And at that point, Elizabeth Taylor was married to a Senator Warner, just outside of D.C. And he had a horse farm there. And Marvin told me he wanted to meet the horse, but I had a feeling he would like to have met
Elizabeth Taylor,
yes. But anyway, we got up there, and the MIAs came back. And so he didn't get to ride the horse. A lot of the parade and all was cut back because of that.
So he would have been riding in the parade. Would he have been representing farmers or just riding in the parade?
Just riding in the parade.
Okay, and when you said MIAs, do you mean missing in action?
Okay. Yeah, don't you remember they mm-hmm. were...
From
they
Vietnam.
Brought them back. Mm-hmm. Carter brought them back. Mm-hmm.
So why did you get invited? Who invited... Got you the ticket to, was Ronald Reagan's inaugural ball?
Yeah.
This would have been in 1980?
The president has 100 tickets.
81.
That he...
Can distribute.
Can distribute on his own. And they're usually given to people that work for him. And so that's... We were some of his people. I don't tell that all that often.
Okay, so that would have been in January of 81, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Were you there during the week when they actually, in D.C., when the tractorcade actually paraded, that February 5th, I think it was?
Mm-hmm. They had, when the tractorcade came in, they had permits and all to come in. And it was, I guess it sounded like out here in the country that it was kind of a free-for-all and it was not orderly. The farmers did not tear up stuff. They came in and they were very orderly. And what they did was broke them up into small areas and small amounts so they could handle them if there was a problem. The police, we made friends with a cop on the beat there, and the cop was, I asked him where he was when the tractors came in, and he said, well, they handed me this stick and said, go out and stop the tractors. I looked at the stick and I said, I can do that. He'd never been out of D.C. before. And he got out on the street, and here came the tractors, and he looked at the size of the tractors, and he said, who gave me this little stick to stop the tractors?
And you said you drove a tractor some?
Yeah, we went to a grocery store, and I don't remember what that was all about at this point, but we went to the grocery store at one point.
And you drove it then?
Yeah.
Well, now, where did you stay in D.C., either when you're lobbying or during this time? Where?
Kansas had an apartment up there, and for the most part, that's where I stayed.
And were the farmers back here supporting you, paying for your plane ticket, and or were you doing this personally? Or?
About half and half. The plane ticket to D.C. at that point, round trip ticket was $123. So we're not talking about what we are today.
Mm. But back then it would have been worse what it would be today, probably.
Probably.
That's when they had all the guards there on that street. I never forgot that.
Okay, I'm not sure that's picking up, but he says that's when all the guards were on the street, and he won't ever forget it.
Yes, we were watching the parade. And as the president came, at one point, David Center and I were in Texas lobbying for Reagan, and Texas was a pivotal point at one point, and that's when we were down there. And we were up on a rise watching all the parade, you know.
Which parade? Are we talking about the tractorcade or the...
No, the inaugural parade.
Okay.
And the president stopped when he saw us, stopped the parade and told us to come on down. And all of the buildings were outlined with machine guns. And of course when he did that and they stopped the parade, everybody turned the guns on us. And it was kind of a sobering thing, you know. There were so many helicopters overhead that the city had a heartbeat. You could feel it. Pulse.
Now when you say us, you're talking about the two of
Marvin
you?
Marvin and I, yeah.
Okay.
We were there, and David and his wife.
David?
Center from Dallas.
And how do you spell his last name?
S-E-N-T-E-R.
Okay. And he was another cattle rancher?
He was dairy.
Dairy. Okay.
Dairy.
Well, now, we had somebody tell us the dairy farmers weren't that involved because they were doing pretty well at this time.
Depending on where you were. And you want to remember everybody's got their own ideas, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But David was so involved that he sold out and went to D.C. and ran the American Ag Office in D.C. He's now a lobby for the milk people.
So he's still involved?
He most certainly is, yes. And his son is in there with him.
Well, now, you said you were maybe offered a job. Did you seriously consider doing that, or...?
I did, but I decided that what I could do to help the farmer would be minuscule at that point from there, and I would have had to have lived in D.C., and that just did not work. I had two children at home, and the green country kids wouldn't be very good in D.C., and mother decided she needed to be home with the kids rather than off flouncing around in D.C.
Approximately about how many times did you go to D.C.? You have any idea?
I don't have any idea. Do you? More than that.
30 or more times. And usually for like a week at a time.
I would go in on Sunday night or early Monday morning, go in on the red eye, and come home Friday afternoon. Things shut down up there on Friday afternoon. The Texans are very welcoming, and they're a rowing group. And we had most of the guys that went to the inaugural were in Texas, but there was one guy that was a widower, and he came in a white suit, had white boots and white suit. And, I mean, he was all decked out in white. And we got in there and to the inaugural, and he said, "Well, where's the welcoming committee?" Well, there wasn't one. He said, "This is no way to treat our people in D.C. So the rest of the evening, he stood at the door as people came and went and welcomed people to the In that information, you're going to find a rural women's conference in the White House. I was one of the speakers for the Rural Women's Conference, and that was under Mrs. Carter, I believe. And that was very interesting. The women's movement was real strong at that time, and they were one of them. And the rural, the women's movement was there, and they kept telling me, they had a tea afterwards for a bunch of us, and they kept telling me that I didn't need to be shackled to this farmer and that farm, that I needed to be liberated. And I said, well, I'm more liberated than I want to be. Anything I want to run or anything my husband wants me to run or do, I attempt to do. I don't want to be more liberated.
Now, was this conference part of WIFE, or was this...
No,
oh,
this
was
just
completely separate.
Yeah, just a rural thing. I was the state president of WIFE. I was on the National Steering Committee for 15 years, which is the national group that steers the whole thing.
Now, does WIFE still exist today?
Oh, yeah.
Is it still as active, or...?
I think those of us that were real active when I was active have, we just got worn out.
And this would have been the 80s and the 90s.
Yeah, yeah. And there was just a few of us that were pretty active. And we just got used up.
Why was it necessary or whatever to have the women doing this? Having an organization like WIFE. Why, what is that?
It's a clock.
Oh, it's a pretty clock. you were lobbying for the farmer, the farm in general, though, I mean.
Well, I don't think there's any business in the United States that, where the wives are more involved. Mm-hmm. And farming is such a all-encompassing project that the men are needed on the farm and the women are more easily
can get away
for a few days. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty well the way it went.
Don't the women own about 80 or 90% of the land in the United States?
70, the last I knew, yeah.
Women own about 70% of the land.
Does that help you?
Yeah.
That's why they were interested to know what's going on.
Now, back in the 70s and early 80s, had you gotten loans in order to farm or to irrigate or to anything like that? Is that part of the reason that you felt you needed to... lobby?
You mean me, myself?
Yeah, or the two of you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I know we've talked to some people where, you know, the banks had very willingly loaned and they bought for irrigation, which was very expensive. And then all of a sudden those high interest rates kicked in. And
what, when the high interest rates kicked in, the value of our land also fell half.
That 1 year... spring, it was worth the good land, the farm dry land, was worth $1,000 an acre. And less than what, 10 months, eight or nine months, it was worth $250 an acre.
Okay, if that didn't pick up on the tape, he's saying that in the spring, land for dry land farming was $1,000 an acre, and 10 months later, it was only worth $250.
The government took it over.
The government took over the loans.
They put a ceiling on the loan.
And put a ceiling on it.
And the way they did that was that farm home and those loans, they would only allow so high, and so that put a ceiling on it.
And I mean that crashed.
And that crashed.
It was interesting what happened when Carter was in D.C. Usually the politicians... and their people are usually they're pretty slick, sophisticated people. And Carter came in with his country people, and a lot of them you couldn't tell from us with the plaid shirts and the jeans, you know. Mm-hmm. And they just didn't fit up there. They just never did.
Now, during the tractorcade, people were really down on President Carter. At least we have lots of signs, pictures of signs and buttons that are not very nice.
He was, from what I saw, my opinion was that he was good with international things, that type of thing. He was very good with.
But he had been a peanut farmer, and you would think that he would have had a connection to farmers.
You would have thought. You would have thought.
Well, when you were, and I assume you not only testified in offices, but you probably visited senators and congressmen's offices.
Oh, yeah.
And talked there. And what kind of a reception did you get from people? And where did you do more than the Kansas?
Oh, yeah.
You
yeah.
did.
It whatever was the hot spot at the time was what we were doing. One of the interesting things about WIFE, Farm Bureau and the other groups that lobby, Farm Bureau will put their own position papers out. And so when you go to lobby, they'll say, here's a position paper, this is what you are to say. American Ag and WIFE got the bills themselves, read them, and came to their own conclusion.
Now, again, before the tape, you said something about whenever you testified or something, it had was published in the paper or the local?
Oh, that was WIFE.
That was WIFE.
That was one of WIFE's policies. You couldn't just get up and say anything. You had to, it had to be published for you to say it. And their thinking on that was that it would be fact if it were published. You know how farmers are, they get kind of sneaky and... If I knew something was fact and could not find it published, then I would go to the newspaper down here, and he was real nice about publishing it for me.
So then you could quote this published article.
Yeah, I could, and I was getting up and quoting myself was what I was doing.
Yeah, you said you had the byline in the paper.
Yeah.
Well, you have to be as sneaky as the congressman, maybe, yeah. is the way to put that.
Well, he knew what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
One of the congressmen that I don't have a real high opinion of most congressmen. Kennedy, I wasn't real fond of his lifestyle, but...
That's Ted Kennedy.
Ted. He had one of the best brains. Usually when you were coming down the hall, after we'd been there a while, the congressman realized that it's a red suit, I'll be somebody I know, you know, lobbyist, and they would say to their aide, who is she, you know. And Kennedy didn't do that. He remembered who you were. He remembered your name. And the things that he asked you were far different from the things that the other congressman was asked. When a bill would come up, a farm bill, he'd say, how does that affect your family? And I'd say, well, that means that I'll be selling my farm, or that means that my children won't be educated, or, you know. And he was always interested in how that affects the family,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. You wouldn't think that from his station that would be all that important, but he always was. And he remembered, not only did he remember my name and that I was WIFE, but he remembered that Marvin raised wheat and cattle. He'd say, here comes my little wheat lady from Kansas, you know.
Mm-hmm. That is remarkable.
Yes,
says why.
Because all the people that he would come into mm-hmm. contact with, you know.
How about Nancy Cassebunch? Did you have...
Yeah, I lobbied with her, yeah. She was interesting. There wasn't that many women there then. And So it looked to me like, with a lot of things, she had to work about twice as hard as the men to.
Now she in the bill that Dole sponsored, probably in 1980, I think maybe, that the Senate did pass, and then they sent it over to the House, and then she did not vote for it at that time. Do you remember anything with that?
No, I don't. I can't remember whether she was involved or anything. I just remember that it was such a heart jerker when Dole didn't vote for it. And I remember being so embarrassed that he was ours. And
well, that must have been another bill, because the one passed in the Senate. So there's probably, was it, we'll have to do some.
Well, it was a farm bill.
A farm bill, but I mean not the one that the tractor came originally that Darrell Miller talks about. And we have the number of that bill. But
Darrell was very good there. You know, he used to work at a radio. And I believe he was on Larry King's, did he tell you?
No. I have to ask him about that. Did Larry King do a program on?
On America? I think so. You asked him.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of things have gotten jumbled up in my mind. It was too many people.
Too many years ago.
Too much, yeah.
Okay, you had all this involvement and all this lobbying, which started around 78, and then, but you carried it on. You would say very involved. In WIFE, and also was the AAM kept going too.
American Ag, yeah.
Were there any other groups, farm groups that you belonged to that you were involved, or is those two mainly?
Oh, we involved Farm Bureau and Farmers Union, but not as.
Maybe the difference where you said you guys read the bills and went after it, whereas they already maybe had their lobbyists or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the impact of all this activity that you took part in? Was there an impact on farmers? What did you gain or not gain? Or?
I think it made the people as a whole more aware of the farm population. And I think people understand now that there isn't a good income, or there isn't, you know, it's not adequate. To have the farms healthy, there needs to be at least two incomes off the same piece of land. One for the person that owns it, and if the person that owns it farms it, he needs an income so he can pay for it, and an income for the guy that is working it. Back in the dirty 30s, the USDA did a study, and the average for every 400 and some acres supported a business on Main Street. And if that's so now, you know, if the figures hold now, it'd be very interesting.
To know what that figure is now. So a 400 and some acre farm.
449.
400 what?
449.
Okay. That would be enough income in the area to keep a business on Main Street going.
So I'm full of trivia.
Can you point to anything specifically that you think, any legislation that came out of any of this? Do you remember?
Oh, WIFE helped with quite a few things. What do you call it when you, the tax that, when you die and...
Oh, inheritance tax.
Inheritance tax. We worked with a bill that went through for inheritance tax, got it raised.
And that's important, to be able to leave the farm to the children, isn't it?
Yes. And the wife or the husband or... Yeah. WIFE worked with several things. Gasahol.
Mainly on the cattle deal, one coming out of Wyoming, Colorado, Montana. Wasn't that where they kind of grouped them when you went to Denver a whole bunch of times?
Oh, that was our wife steering committee there in Denver.
Okay, he was saying that the wife steering committee, you had many meetings in Denver with the cattlemen from mm-hmm. Colorado, Wyoming, and that area.
Well, a lot of them were the cattlemen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's when we had the Denver Fat Stock Show.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people. The ladies would have their big meetings there.
While the stock show was going on, the women would have their wife meetings.
I was there a number of times for that. We always went to Denver Fat Stock Show.
The Denver Fat Stock, is that what he's saying? F-A-T? Yeah. Fat Stock Show.
Mm-hmm. You got a lot of it was situated within people out in that country, you know, western, northwestern states. And we got it going away.
I lobbied with pineapple growers and with cranberry growers. And
you must have made a lot of friends from all over during this time.
I did. Met the most interesting people I've ever met anywhere.
Are you still in contact with any of those?
A lot of them, yeah. A lot of them.
How about the people around here? What did they think about all this activity that you were doing?
I think they thought I was insane.
For what reason?
Because it was, they thought I was radical.
But when they got something through, they sure was ready to go along with it then.
And the interesting thing is that 10 to 20 years later, people would say, I finally see what you were doing, or what was that, you know. Finally understood what was going on way, way later.
Way later.
Yeah.
If they would have just helped with a lot of this, it could have made it a lot powerful and done a lot more good. If we could have got the people, the average farmer out here and rancher, to go, you know, to help with it and work with it.
I was in D.C. in early days, out in Colorado and western Kansas. They were saying, don't plant. And it was real interesting to see what happened up there. The congressman got real upset when the farmers said don't plant, and that told me that was exactly what we should have done.
Mm-hmm.
But we all had mortgages and, you know, bankers and people we had to satisfy. You couldn't not do that.
Yeah, and it started out that way. It was mm-hmm. started out to be a strike where you didn't mm-hmm. plant, but then mm-hmm. like you said you couldn't. You would have lost your farms quicker that way.
But yeah. It would have worked very effective. Yeah.
But if everyone would have done
it. If everybody had done it, it would have worked so effective.
It would have blocked everything, you know, and the bankers would have had to stand still.
And it really moved then. It would have went into more stuff else. On down the line that the farmers raised and went to the grocery store and the retailer and all. It'd been a terrific thing.
Okay, he was saying that this would have worked all down the line, that if there had been a strike, it would have affected the retailer and, you know, all down to the grocery store, and then it would have worked. I'm afraid we're not picking you up on this, and that's why I'm repeating. I probably should have you come sit over here, and I'd sit on the floor. You're adding good things, but a lot of our transcriber is going to be frustrated when she can't hear. Is this something you would do again? I mean, maybe not at your age, but you thought it was worthwhile and that it was something that if you had to do it over, you... Maybe we've had one thing you would have done differently. You would have tried to get everybody to strike, but...
I think I would. One of the things that we did as a couple was pull together for that. And it was good for our marriage.
I think we've had that before. You know, farming, and maybe you sort of indicated before, is a partnership. It takes both the husband and wife to make the farm go.
One time when I came back, I had been, I'd had a meeting with the vice president and with the president and I don't remember who, but some pretty heavy stuff.
Of vice president and president of?
United States.
Of the United States, okay. Yeah, that's pretty heavy.
And I came home and Marvin came in the house and I was saying, and I did this, and I did that. And he just turned around and walked out while I was talking, and I thought, well, that was ugly. And he came back in and he had the stool cleaner and he said, you'll be needing this. That's his nice little way of bringing me down to earth.
Sounds like you weren't doing your job while she was gone.
No, he was just...
I know. Well, maybe, I wonder if I can, let's see, I'm going to try to move this over there. I'm going to ask him a couple questions. Can you watch that cord, Miss Rosetta, so I make sure I get you on it? Oh, well, I just did that. Okay, Marvin, what was it like having your wife go away every week?
Oh, I got used to it. We ran this farm different than a lot of them because it was large enough that I was gone a lot of the time from one farm to the other, or one place to the other with on the livestock deal. I traveled a lot.
Away from the farm?
Well, to our different farms.
To the different farms in the area?
Yeah, in different states.
Too. Oh, in different states.
We were in Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas, Colorado.
Nebraska?
Nebraska.
But now you still had a young child in the...
Who?
Where were these kids when...
Oh, I took care of them part of the time. The older sisters took care of part of them.
Okay.
They had learned that a long time ago.
They were in school.
They were at school. All mm-hmm. those kids went to school. We'd seen that they went to school and was there every day.
Mm-hmm.
That was very important to us to have our kids to get a good, best education to get them to have, you mm-hmm. know.
So you weren't a house husband cooking the meals and things necessarily?
No, I didn't do the cooking. No, I had other things to do instead of the cooking. So, now that was what I did a lot of the time. I looked more after the cattle than I did the farm ground. The hard man did the farming on around this place. And, that they took care of, but we had these cattle in different places on different ranches that we took care of.
So about how many people did you have working for you? Or?
Oh, how would you put that? The ones that we leased from?
It depends on what we were doing.
Yeah, but there was always two to three here, but on these different ranches where we had different people there taking care of the cattle there too. And they'd be in the grass. We was back in the Flint Hills for 20-some years. And then we were in Oklahoma, probably, 10? And we was out in Colorado, in Winter Park County. We was right, what's the name of that, the lodge? What do they call that?
Peak?
Pike Peak?
Well,
that, we were, where this place was, in Colorado. We were about 12 miles northwest of Pike's Peak.
Oh.
And the cattle drank out. There's an 11-mile reservoir in Colorado there, west of Colorado Springs. And I remember the cattle drinking out of this lake that was about 15, 20 miles long. And it's beautiful up there. It only get about 75 degrees is the highest you usually get up there in the mountains.
What's your daughter?
And you,
we take them out there for the summer.
You would lease the land and have them there in the summer and then
bring them home.
Bring them back and sell them or?
Or keep them, whatever. The mother cows, we'd always keep them one year or the other. And, it was a terrific job to find farms, homes because we had, 400 mother cows. Without the steers and the calves and all too, so we had a lot of cattle.
Well, did you get into this political arena too, or did you leave that
all
to her?
I tried to,
went to Topeka with us.
I'd go with her sometimes, but mainly I wasn't in too much. There's always somewhere calling on a telephone at night if I was at home. And I knew a lot was going on about it, but I kind of stayed out as much as I could because to have the four daughters and the kids going to school and then running the farm, well, I had more than I could handle without right. looking for any more. Yeah, it was quite
a... They were very supportive.
Worried more about the kids and stuff than I was anything else. To see that they were being taken care of.
And she just said that you were very supportive of her going.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, it'd do some good. Like that right up there, we, Trichocali, we raised trichocali and sold it to seed people that that raised it. We had about what it was close to 150 farms that we serviced by made the trichocali seed. I wished I'd had it this year. It was bringing $16.50 a bushel for seed, and you know, if you raised a few thousand bushel at that, it worked.
It worked, yeah. That was something I'd never...
We changed our farm over from wheat to trichocali. A lot of other people was still raising wheat for $2 and $3 a bushel. Well, I was more than doubling that, raising it for trichocali.
Is that a dry land crop?
Yes. Or? Well, you could irrigate it,
either
too.
Either way.
But the protein on that was nearly as good as alfalfa.
Hmm.
And if... wheat would make 40 bushel, and this would make 50 between 50 and 60 bushel eggs. So we raised it and put our mother cows on that in the spring when they had their baby calves. The food value of that was terrific over wheat or other feed. Mm-hmm. That was the reason we went to it. But we a lot of this, the colleges and stuff, we got a lot of information from the, what was the color Hayes, wasn't it? And then there was one out of Denver that we talked to all the time. And he actually, we furnished the seed for that Denver test plot for Colorado.
So you were right in on the experimentals nearly.
Yeah, well, and, yeah.
I mean, in the very beginning of it. Yeah.
Yes. And it was the most effective grain that we ever was involved in because when you got twice as much a bushel for it, why, it worked. And we put the mother cows out on it when they was having their baby calves, and we put them on about, what, February, or first part of February, and until they was ready to go to grass. The 15th of April was when our cattle was ready to go to the Flint Hills of Colorado or Nebraska mm-hmm. or Oklahoma. But that was usually the date that we left here with them. The health on it was so much better than the way we did before on the dry stuff that we had to raise the cattle. What I'm trying to say is it worked so much better than what we had. And with the college guys would tell us what we were doing and what the test plot, what it would, how much our food value to, according to what we was raising to other stuff. It was so much better.
Well, that's interesting. Because I'm not a farm girl, I've never heard of that before. Can you think of anything else you want to add? I'm not sure I've asked all the questions. Well, Rosetta, did you think of anything?
I just want to ask Marvin a question. Did you lease all this ground, Marvin?
I leased part of it, but I own part of it, too.
So you own land
in
Colorado and Oklahoma?
No. All the land that I ever owned was all in Kansas.
But did you own land in, like, in the Flint Hills?
No, we just leased it back there.
Okay, I was just trying to get in my head.
Mm-hmm. Is there any other good stories you have? Anything that happened with those farmers back in Washington, D.C.? We already know that you were rubbing elbows with the president and the vice president. So.
Well, one of the things I thought was interesting, when you get an appointment with either of those people, they check you out, you know, really good. The last time we were lobbying, I don't remember what it was about, but anyway, I was allowed in to see the president, but I wasn't passed for the vice president.
And what president was that?
I don't remember.
Do you remember?
Probably Reagan.
Reagan. You remember about what year you stopped going to Washington, D.C. to lobby? During Reagan's 8 years, did you go beyond?
No, I think it must have been that
okay.
time.
So by that the 80s.
I was very ill by the time I quit. I went to get out of bed one morning and nothing worked. I couldn't get out. I had rheumatism and four kinds of rheumatism and fibromyalgia. Mm-hmm. So I was in a lot of pain. And
well, is there anything else you'd like to add about this time period in your life?
Oh, well, I appreciate my books from the library immensely.
Well, we're happy to do that for you, and we appreciate you doing this interview.
So did your children, were they supportive? Your older children, Sandy and Jerry, were they supportive? I mean, they were on with their lives, but were they supportive, or did they think Mom should stay home sometime?
No, I never did hear that.
Okay.
Randy used to roll her eyes, you know how kids will do, especially about newspapers. She thought that was just going a little far, you know, reading all these newspapers and just having newspapers everywhere. And when she was in college, I don't remember what class it was, but she was taking something to do with history, and the professor got into the tractorcades and all that, and Randy told him after class that wasn't the way it was at all. And he said, well, how do you know? And she said, well, one of the things he had talked about was Topeka, going to Topeka. And she said, well, I was there. And then the other thing that he had told about was something in D.C. And he said, my mother was at the other place. So she said, I know that's not right. You need to... And he called me later, didn't he, to ask about it.
Hmm. Do you remember any of the demonstrations that went on in February of 79, or the farmers when the big group was there and the tractors were on the mall? What do you remember about that time period?
They kept cops around the tractors real closely, and I don't know. I never did figure out what they thought we were going to do, but they, you know, I think this was about. They didn't know what to do with us because we had a sense of humor. And the people in D.C. don't have the sense of humor that the farmers do. And it's sort of a strange... We used to call it Disneyland East because it's sort of a strange area out there. But they wouldn't let people go to the mall. And they had children there that needed teachers. They had... people there that need doctors, and you know, there was people we needed to get onto the mall to the farmers. And so we'd go and get a bottle of whiskey and take it down and give it to the cop, and then we could smuggle people on and off.
Well, that's a new story. I hadn't heard that one. Do you remember what it felt like to be in, were you in the big crowd in the mall? When they were on the Capitol, or the Ag Building steps and that, were you there then? Mm-hmm. Do you remember how you felt at that time?
Part of what went through my head was that this has got to be part of history. And then I was just a little afraid because it was such a huge mob, and it was, I wouldn't say unruly, but it was, there was a lot of animosity there and quite a bit of fear and anger. So it was, you picked up a lot of strange things from others in the crowd.
And at that time there were the guns on the tops of the buildings too. What did that made you nervous, or?
Oh yeah, there wasn't a time that did not make you nervous.
There was one about every 20 foot on the top of all these buildings for a couple miles. They were up on there with there was a soldier, one of them with the guns, with a hand, a regular rifle, and then every second one, was it, or third one? Second one, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Had a machine gun. And here we were down below there. We wasn't over about 50 feet from over there, and having them darn guns aimed at you. That made you nervous.
they had SWAT cops there, and I don't know whether you girls have ever been anywhere where a SWAT cop is, but they don't give voice commands. They just use their billy clubs. They weren't letting farmers cross the street at one point there. And I was with the guys I lobbied with from Texas, and I, at that point I was the only woman there. And we'd gotten back from somewhere we'd been. We'd been to see the mayor, and I don't remember now what it was all about, but we came back, and we crossed the street, and one of the cops started whacking at me with the nightstick, and the boys from Texas pushed me up against him. And I'm thinking, you know, you're supposed to be friends of mine, and you're pushing me into this? And it took me a while to realize that they were pushing me into him so he couldn't get a good swing at me. The David Center that you've heard me talk about, he was a cop in D.C. He was on the police force in Dallas when Kennedy was killed there.
They came in, that's when that other guy, what was his name, was shot?
Ruby.
Ruby, and he was there when that happened, and they grabbed that. When they, how, which one was it? Anyhow, they loaded them, part of them up on the airplane, remember, on the highway right at the edge of Dallas. It was scary. Really.
The tales he tells are not like what we heard in the news at all.
No, it was completely just about like a war started.
So, the SWAT guy was just trying to keep you from crossing the street when he started swinging, or...
I don't know what he was doing.
And he knew you were a woman.
Yeah.
You were at the front of the line, or...
Well, I was just crossing the street with three or four men, and... This was not uncommon. This is not uncommon. You had to be there to see what was going on.
This fascinated this nozzle ball, I guess you'd call it, wouldn't you? Anyhow, I had never seen this much stuff in my whole life. We was in a room that was probably nearly a block long and probably a couple hundred foot wide. And they put, for the people when they came in there, it was cold, it was in the winter time and snow on the ground. Mm-hmm. And they had tables that was probably a block long, and they put their hats and their coats, lay them on this, and they honestly, they was 3 foot deep on there. And that was mink coats and furs and some of these hats these guys had and all. It was just gorgeous stuff. And these women from these foreign countries, the oil companies, would have these ladies that would, they'd come in their big gowns and have a trail, what would you call it?
A train.
That might be 40, 50 foot long, and it'd have two girls carrying the back in it. And then the ladies would have these diamond necklaces and head deals.
Yes.
You've seen stuff on picture shows, but they don't show what them people, that these folks had. It just shocked you to see what these had.
I like to listen to the news up there because it's their news is quite a bit different than ours. The morning after the inaugural, they told that there was a chinchilla coat on such and such a bus and to come down at police headquarters and
claim it?
And, yeah. And I thought, you know, anybody with a chinchilla coat could have done better than a bus, you know.
Well, that's something some of the other people have mentioned. What did you think of the media coverage of the tractorcade and the farmers' issues and how the television and newspapers covered those types of things?
Most of them didn't really understand. Is that what you're getting from other people?
Or that they didn't cover it, even.
Yeah. Well, that's where the women do a good job, you know. If somebody's not doing it, well, you go over and do it. Take care of it, you know. They were printing what I wanted, so I wrote it up, you know.
Now, were you involved in making any of the signs for the tractors or the buttons or anything?
Oh, yeah. Put sheets across the street up there. We sewed some sheets together, and I can't tell you how many, but it went clear across the street, and I found there's like sweatshops up there yet, and so I found some sheets that were worn out at the hotel where the our lobby, where our
apartment,
no, where our store was, not the store,
office.
Yeah. Office was. Then someone else took paint and painted on it.
You remember what it said?
No, something about the strike. We had a. Do you remember Owen Brewer?
No.
That's Owen Brewer?
Yes, he worked for us for 30-some years. And a little old fella that, he was a widower, and he, I brought back some stickers for the back of a car, bumper stickers, and it said, like Dolly Parton, I've gone bust. I just thought it was funny, mm-hmm. You know, and brought it back. And all of a sudden, I couldn't find those, and he had snuck those out and put them on his car. It seems so out of character for him. Most of what we did was so terribly serious that it was hard to keep your sense of humor, and that was very important, you know, to keep the sense of humor and the lightness.
Now, you kept your farm, but some of your friends around here did not. After, you know, in the 80s, they lost their farm. Do you remember what that was like during that time period, to see your friends?
Oh, we lost part of our farm.
Oh, you lost part of yours. You used it to pay off others, or other part? What was that like, emotionally?
Death. Literally, it was the death of the farm.
This here was the homestead, the Armsman homestead. So, did it make any difference that this was your homestead, where your house was, whether they could take your property or not?
It depends on which class of bankruptcy you're in, or whether you're working out a deal with your bank. Some banks would work with you and some just wouldn't. The bank we were with told us that they could make $400,000 off of us by closing us out. And she told us that she put us out in the road with no clothes and nothing.
That was a local bank here?
Not here in Kinsale, no. Okay. It's in Spearville.
Okay. Well, we've heard stories from other towns. Yeah. And their attitude was they could make money if they got rid of the farmers that were there, because they could sell the corporate farms? Or
our farm. Mm-hmm. They would make money. They would make $400,000 off of our farm by putting us out of business.
So you sold part of the farm to pay off your debt so that they couldn't take, like, the homestead and...
Crooked people I know of are the bankers.
Well, we've heard that before.
Yeah.
Have you?
No joke. I tell you, around the farm, that is one of your worst things you got.
They've got your, you know, they've got everything, all of your records, and they know right where to hit you and what to do to you, you know. And the things have changed so much that the farmer, the banker, runs the farm rather than the farmer so much of the time.
Okay, this is a personal question. You don't want to answer it. You don't have to, but you're both elderly. What's going to happen with your farm? Do you have either of any of the girls going to take it over, or no? So this will be, your generation will be the end of this family farm, probably.
You never know.
This is something else that, you know, it's starting to happen all over, that the children can't make a living, and so they have left to make a living, and then the farm doesn't have anybody trained to take it over.
It takes so much money to buy a farm now. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just prohibitive for a young family to unless your folks do the whole thing for you.
And get it
to you. They just hand you the checkbook and say, here we go. Mm-hmm. You better take care of it. And that's about
You didn't have one of those in your family either?
somebody to take over the farm?
We never owned, my family never owned. My dad always worked for farmers, but we never owned property.
Now, you're Fred's sister.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And you're Fred's age.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Fred's my brother for the transcriber.
Is he still in
Dodge?
Dodge, is he?
Mm-hmm.
Is he tired?
Oh, yeah. He's retired. He's tired.
Is it?
No, when they came out, this
he nice fella.
The old people, my grandfather came out here, and my grandma came out here from Indiana. And when they came to Kinsley here, they came in a wagon and a team of horses. Had one milk cow, a dozen chickens, and what else did they? Oh, and one mama pig. And they came in the fall when they came here. And honestly, they didn't have enough to eat
right.
to keep the family. There was four kids, and they, Grandpa telling me about shooting rabbits and pheasants and prairie chickens just to have something for the family to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And they had that back in Indiana and Kentucky, where they didn't have enough to eat. And he was always so afraid that they, you know, that they couldn't stay or couldn't survive. And I don't know just exactly how to put the rest of it. But anyhow, there was a lot of other ones come in about that time. The Civil War was just over,
mm-hmm.
about 19... well, it's fallen that. He was here, what, about 19... they came out here about 1900.
Okay.
In that area.
Mm-hmm.
But if they could stand it for... could make it the first 1 or 2 years, they'd be all right. But otherwise, it was dangerous in that each families had to help the other one, because a lot of them just couldn't make it unless their neighbor or their folks would send money from back east to keep the kids and the families surviving out here. He told me about that repeatedly, that he was always so scared that they couldn't be able to feed the family for the next year.
And they literally didn't have enough to eat back.
Yeah.
And really,
part of why they came here.
When you get up to the AAM, that's the same thing you were doing. You couldn't make enough money and to feed and keep your family. It was the same thing had started, only in a completely different way.